Just in time for summer, the folks at Epic Brewing have released a new canned cocktail, the Utah Margarita. A delicious blend of real lime and agave, the Utah Margarita is ready to drink by the river or in the park. And here's the kicker, no need to buy it at a liquor store. Pick up a six-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's, or visit Epic Brewing on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. Here's what Salt Lake's talking about. General plans are the lost scrolls of city planning. Sometimes they lay dormant for 40 years, and sometimes they are resuscitated when a neighborhood hates a development. But now, for the first time ever, Salt Lake City has defined general plans in city code. So what does that mean for how our city will continue to grow up, grow out, and fill in? It's Thursday, March 21st. I'm Allie Vallarta, and this is CityCast Salt Lake. Nick Norris, Salt Lake City Planning Director. The city just defined a general plan in city code for the first time ever. So what is a general plan and how do you use it?
Yeah, so a general plan can be pretty complicated because it includes a lot of different things.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so this is where this starts to get fun and hopefully not bogged down in all the jargon. But essentially, if you were to sum it up, it is intended to be a guide to help the city manage future growth.
Okay. When you say guide, is it neighborhood specific? Like street specific?
It can be both of those things. In Salt Lake City, we use what we call community plans. And so the city's divided into 10 different larger neighborhoods. Each one of those has a plan. And then we have some citywide plans for things like transportation that connect neighborhoods and like our parks and open space plans and reimagine nature is what that's called, to help us guide where parks would be in the future, things like that. And similarly with our housing plan, it's a citywide plan as well. So really the community plans are really focused on the more detailed, how is land used?
Yeah. I mean, we've been planning land use in this city for like hundreds of years. Why define a general plan in city code now?
Yeah, well, the first thing is that one, state law requires us to have what the state code calls a general plan. And we've never really used that term extensively in the city. Every city, you need to have a general plan that covers certain topics, housing, transportation, other land use things, and then you can add some other things to it, pretty much whatever else you want to cover. And so that's what we've done for the first time, is define how all of our various plans work together. Something that is kind of crazy to think that we haven't officially done that in the past. We've practiced it, but now we've officially have it in our code.
What does this set us up for?
So it sets us up for a number of big things. Probably the most pressing is that, and we've been linking our land use planning and our water planning for a long time, but the state adopted a law a couple years ago that says by the end of 2025, cities have to integrate their land use plans with their water conservation plans. And so that's really what we're setting the stage for. We took the opportunity to do it now because of this community benefit policy that came out of Thriving in Place. And one of the recommendations from that was to require some sort of community benefit when somebody is seeking to change the plan for their specific property. In order to do that, we had to define what it meant, right? Because otherwise we're gonna be pretty arbitrary in how it's applied. And so that was really, those were the two things that really led us down this path.
And the Thriving in Place, for anyone who's unfamiliar, is the city's sort of anti-gentrification plan. Can you give me an example of where water use intersects with land development or planning?
If you think about our neighborhoods and how they've changed over time. So decades ago, we had a lot more people who lived in our neighborhoods because our household sizes were larger. We haven't really seen a lot of new housing added within neighborhoods. But when you think about those older homes and having more people in them, and then you start to see or think about what has changed from water use and innovation, really. Like, you know, think back to like the toilets that were used in pre-1980s, and they were like 3 or 4 gallon toilet tanks. So every time you flush, that was going down the drain, right? And right. Now they're low flow. They're low volume. Our low volume shower heads are more efficient washers and dishwashers, a reduction in outdoor water use. And so our neighborhoods right now are actually using less water than they did decades ago, and significantly less. And so when we plan, we take that into account. And so we can look at our infrastructure, whether it's the water delivery system or like the sewer or stormwater, and we can look at what those capacities are. And then we know how much new growth those utilities can support. And so that's a general way that we look at where areas can grow. Do they have the infrastructure to do it? And one of the big wild cards is climate change. And because no one's really sure exactly what's going to happen, you know, so no one really knows what that's going to mean for a place like Utah. Are we going to see less water? Or is our snowpack going to change? What does that do to our water supplies? And so we want to start building in more resiliency into our water planning so that we can make better land use decisions.
Well, on the note of neighborhoods, I mean, the city has dozens of general plans, many of them corresponding to neighborhoods. Some of them haven't been updated for decades, like for the Northwest communities, Rose Park, Fair Park, beyond what I think some people are not so affectionately calling a burgeoning warehouse district. We're seeing a lot of changes. Why does it feel like the general plans haven't kept up?
Primarily because, just to be frank, in the past, the city hasn't made it a priority. And so most plans are intended to be 20, 30-year outlooks, which is great. But the problem with that is that, and one thing that we've experienced, particularly in the last 5 years, is that the physical change of cities can happen way faster than that. And so if plans aren't monitored and updated, they have a really hard time adapting, which means the city has a hard time adapting. And that's kind of what we're experiencing right now. You know, one of the projects that we're working on right now is consolidating zoning districts, because we have so many of them. It's just becoming almost a burden to administer for anyone who has to use the zoning code. So we have almost as many future land use designations. So that is a future land use designation is kind of like a zoning map, and it will say what the future like density or general kind of use block should be in the future. And when those things aren't able to adapt and update, and we have so many of them, we end up having different long-term plans in different parts of the city, and there's no cohesive connection between what the city's experiencing as a whole. And so one of the things that we're looking at is trying to, which will happen probably after we get the zoning consolidation thing done, is simplifying those future land use designations so that, for example, low density residential means the same thing wherever it's applied in the city, and it's not different from the avenues to Poplar Grove. And so that helps us with our long range water planning, because it's easier for us to use existing data to forecast how much water is going to be consumed based on those plans. Right now, it's really hard because we have whatever 58 different future land use designations. And so we basically have to generalize those anyway, and it makes it a little bit more cumbersome to do that kind of projection.
Okay, so when it comes to things like city planning, zoning, I get confused very easily. Tell me if this comparison is ridiculous or if I can carry on living this way. All of these plans that we've been talking about are general plans. What changes is the level at which they apply. So, neighborhood plans, like for the avenues or Sugar House, are like states' rights. And citywide general plans, like housing or transportation, are like the Constitution. Can I go on thinking that?
I think that obviously the big difference is that different communities really should be in the plans, really should be identifying how they can help address the future needs of the city. And not just be, we've decided we want to stay exactly how we are right now, because that's what we want in our plan. And the problem with that is that means the other neighborhoods in the city are going to be shouldering all of the burden of new growth and change, which is kind of what we've seen, right? And so there's a real challenge there, and whether that's an equitable approach and how we apply our plans and our codes.
Epic Brewing is one of the OGs in building Utah's craft beer scene. But I am most excited about their recent adventures in canned cocktails. First, they released the Utah Mule. And as a big fan of ginger, I have been sipping those for almost a year now. But now, this April, we have the Utah Margarita. A delicious, locally fermented blend of real lime and agave. And they create alcohol by fermenting cane sugar instead of using tequila, which means you can buy Utah margaritas at the grocery store. Pick up a six-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita or Utah Mule at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's. Or you can visit Epic Brewery on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. They're open 7 days a week. And this fall, look out for the Utah Cosmo. When we hear a general plan cited as a reason why a neighborhood shouldn't change, the avenues feels like a great place to start having that conversation. There were Avenues residents that referenced their 1987 general plan in opposition to slightly more dense housing in that neighborhood. I mean, do they have a good point? Like, if it's written, it's written.
Well, I think what happens with older plans is that they're not relating to the current needs. And so we know that we also have a housing plan, right? And it identifies that we're short a certain number of units and that we should be making changes to support more homes of different types in all neighborhoods of the city. And so it creates a situation where when we have those older plans that haven't yet been updated, and then we have these newer plans, like the housing plan is every 5 years, because that's how often it needs to be updated to address housing issues, they conflict. And so when we have a citywide policy, our outlook on that as the planning division and the planners for the city is to defer to those citywide policies because they are more recent and they are more specific. And so when it creates conflict like that, that's how we look at it. That's why when that proposal came in to update the Avenues plan for that specific development, why it was supported by the planning division and the planning commission and ultimately the city council.
I mean, does establishing a general plan tend to put neighborhood politics to bed, or does it open new doors for ongoing debate?
I have not seen it put anything to bed. I think people think that it does and it should, but you know, with how fast things change in the world now, it's really unrealistic to think that a plan is going to be valid for 15 years or 20 years or longer. And so one of the things that the city has to grapple with is how much resources are we going to put towards our community plans in order to keep those more current than what we've done in the past. And that's one of our charges in the planning division, is trying to figure out how to do that. And so that's why you start seeing us, you know, we believe that we can change what we're working on instead of requiring new resources to do that work. And our viewpoint is that's a better use of taxpayer dollars to do it that way versus constantly throw dollars at consultants to do the work. And so that's what we're doing. We seem to have, you know, a lot of political support for that approach, and we're moving forward.
I mean, it does feel like making it feel like the growth of the city is a team effort has largely become the burden of local politicians. How do you kind of get us beyond that? How do we get these conversations beyond happening during elections?
Yeah, well, I think the big thing is being able to have the time and the staff resource to stay on top of the change, right? And to analyze our plans to make sure that policies are working or not, and having just frank conversations with communities when a change is identified. And, you know, there needs to be some hard discussions. And I think, like, the recent issues associated with a declining student enrollment in the Salt Lake City School District is kind of leading to that, you know. And I think it's one of those situations where people are recognizing So we have fewer kids in our schools. There's many reasons for that. But what are the policies in place that the city has some influence over that can potentially change that down the road, whether it's a change in what kinds of housing is allowed in our neighborhoods, to where family size housing can go, and what are the ancillary needs for people to want to live in a three bedroom, say, apartment? You know, it's if it's a three bedroom apartment on Portland South, most people aren't going to want to live with their kids there. But they might live in a three bedroom apartment that's on random, you know, like on 1500 East or something, or 2100 East, where maybe there's less traffic and it's closer to their schools, it's closer to where their friends live.
Yeah. I mean, I hear you saying that a 2030 year plan is just too far out. It's not realistic. Change happens too quickly in the era that we're in. At the same time, if we update our general plan at the end of every like election cycle, we're just going to be riding a pendulum of changing how we are planning for long-term growth in our city. How is the city thinking about this right now? Like, are we about to see updated general plans kind of all over the place in accordance with this new code?
That'll be the next step for sure. And so we don't know what that looks like right now. It's a pretty tall task to update the plans for 10 different communities. So yeah. One of the things that we're considering is that, you know, maybe instead of having that future land use map in each community plan, maybe that's something that is an overarching map that is in, you know, the city's vision document, Plan Salt Lake. And maybe that sets the stage and does the linking to here's our housing needs, and every community or neighborhood plan should identify how that neighborhood is going to help address these needs. And when we do that, I think it changes the conversation quite a bit. And by linking things more to like the housing plan, where it's required by state code to be updated every 5 years, it changes that dynamic of where the plans and updates land on the list of priorities. And so that's the direction that we're thinking we're going to be going after we get the zoning consolidation stuff moved forward. But that's, again, you know, that's a year out. So we have a lot of planning to catch up on in Salt Lake.
I mean, it feels like one of the big conversations that we're having in this city right now is around public comment. How much public comment is the right amount, especially when it comes to land use decisions? And at the same time, like, as a kind of regular Salt Laker, like, we're often asked to weigh in on this plan making. And then within a week, we get two new stadium proposals from the Utah legislature that create an 11-block entertainment district in our neighborhood. And it's like, is that in the plan? Like, I understand why it can all feel kind of confusing. And I think the city's land use authority is, in particular, has to be one of the most difficult to wrap your head around elements of city growth and city planning. What is the best way for the average Salt Laker to be part of the conversation as the city plans for its future?
I think it really depends on what availability people have, right? And just like, you know, we all have to make priorities in our lives. And I think one of the hard parts about just local government in general, especially a city that has a ton going on like Salt Lake City does, right? It can be very overwhelming. And, you know, even we have to prioritize what our role is on those projects. And so I think the best thing to do is to actually, at least, like, we have an email listserv that people can sign up for, and they can get notice of everything that we do. Then they can pick and choose what's important to them. I think one of the problems with, you know, general like community meetings and things like that is that they're hard for people to attend, especially if it doesn't work with whatever their life needs are. And we're trying to do more and more virtual, online, kind of on-demand types of engagement, so that people can do it based on their availability and their needs, or go out to places where people are going to be anyway, you know, whether it's, you know, setting up some kind of a booth at a farmer's market or a park or something. And you get a totally different crowd of people that may have access to that. So I think staying aware of what's happening is probably the single biggest thing that somebody from the community can do. And the best thing to do is to sign up for those kinds of notices. Then you can kind of pick and choose what's interesting and important to you.
Nick, before I let you go, I mean, that was really my last question for you, but is there anything that you think that we need to clarify or that we haven't covered that you think it's important to mention in this conversation? I feel like city employees are often put on the spot about what their job is when there's like a controversy, but it's not as often that you get to just kind of explain how things work. So what did we miss?
The one thing that I would add to all these discussions is that, and I think this is something that people don't consciously make a connection to, but all planning is political. I mean, you talked about, you know, not tying things to like election cycles and things like that. But the reality is adopting plans, adopting codes, ultimately it's the elected officials who prioritize and decide those things. And I think one of the things that is missed sometimes is that once those plans or those, especially the codes, once they're in place, it's a totally different process and purpose of communicating with the public versus a general plan. And I think that's a big part of that communication and how you reach people is that, you know, general plans, they really are the opportunity to think big and to help establish a big vision for the city. And I think that's oftentimes missed because people tend to focus on what's immediate to them. And so I think the one thing that the additional thing I'd add is, you know, as we go out and do things like update plans, is for people to really think big. And, you know, I think like the Rio Grande plan is like a perfect example of people in the community thinking big about something and the legs that it got because of how grand they thought. And there's other things out there too that are just as grand. You know, like the Nine Line started as a student project at the University of Utah. And so yeah. I think just that being able to think about the future of where you live and what you think would really improve your quality of life are such an important ways for the community to not get bogged down on whether they think a building is designed right or in the right location and, you know, having the larger conversation.
I like that. We love big ideas on this show. So I'm glad to hear that inside the house, inside the city building, there's also interest in big ideas.
Yep, we love them.
Salt Lake City Planning Director Nick Norris, thank you so much for your time.
No, thank you.
If you find that this show and our newsletter make it effortless for you to keep up with our changing city, I am asking you to consider becoming a founding member of CityCast Salt Lake at membership.citycast.fm. Our members help make this show readily available to everyone. That is all for us today here on CityCast Salt Lake. Thank you for listening. We will be back tomorrow morning with more from around this city.